אותנו מכל העמים, אהבת אותנו, רצית בנו. And then it says, רוממתנו מכל הלשונות. Now, what does that mean, if anything? What does it mean, רוממתנו? You raised us up, מכל הלשונות, from all the languages that might be used. So, of course, if you had to say something, you would probably say that it has to do with Hebrew versus other languages. Okay, we're going to be disturbed now. We have a disturbance. Rabbi Sylvester came at an early disturbance. Right. Here's Rabbi Wolf. Rabbi Walk, how are you? I've not seen you in many years. It's very hard for me to avoid taking note of the fact that you're here. So in spite of the fact that you're a disturbance, I can't help it. Anyway, it's nice that Rabbi Walk and his wife just made Aliyah, I think. Did I say something inaccurate? That's what I heard. I heard that it's Aliyah. That's great. So this is like the old time. We're now in old time, but a different generation.
Prehistory.
Yeah. No, why? It's all history. There is no prehistory. And Rabbi Sylvester organized this, so thank you very much. So you're in charge of the disturbance. So again, Ramamtanu Mikol HaLashonot is the Nusach of Tefillah. And the Nusach of Tefillah says something about language. Ramamtanu Mikol HaLashonot. So everybody would say that that's Hebrew. That's what we speak. We speak Hebrew. It's silly for me to speak in English and say we speak Hebrew. But you know what I mean, right? We're just corrupt. We are corrupt. But Ramamtanu Mikol HaLashonot refers to, as Rashi says, Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh, we all think is Hebrew, Ivrit, or the Hebrew of the Bible. Let's say that, the Hebrew of the Bible. Now, in the Torah itself, in the Parashah of Noach, there is a description of how Lashonot came to be. How is it that there are many languages in the world, and not just one language in the world? Because if God created Adam and then Chava in some way, right, a very small number of people, and they became a large number of people, how come they speak different languages? So the explanation of the Torah is something that you all know, but it's interesting. Now, modern scholarship or modern academic work might have a different way of looking at it. But that's not important to us. We're just interested in what the Torah's message is, what the Torah is trying to... And we're not going to argue the case whether the Torah has a better explanation than somebody else. We're just going to try to understand what the Torah wants to tell us. So in these psukim, let's just look at the psukim. This is important, right? All of the world spoke one language, Safa Achat. Rashi says, of course, Safa Achat, Lashon Kodesh. Safa Achat is Lashon Kodesh. And everybody spoke Hebrew. Now there are many proofs of that. The fact that when God created the world, He created the world in Hebrew. Right, Vayom Elokim Yehi Or, Vayehi Or. That's what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that the world was created in Hebrew. Of course, the Kabbalists make much of this. But even non-Kabbalists, even other Kabbalists, seem to agree. I mean, you look at the various commentaries, that the world was created B'Ivrit. And that's Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh is the language that God spoke. Further, in the Torah, in the discussions that take place between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Chayim VeHevel, for example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Adam and Chava, right, and all the explanations about how the world came to be, all of that is done in Ivrit. So the story says Vayehi, right? Vayehi means that it came to pass, like a new story. Vayehi, Kal Haaretz Afa Achat Udvarim Achadim. What is Udvarim Achadim? Lo Yodeh. Udvarim Achadim means they spoke about things. They spoke to each other in this language about things. Rashi says Udvarim Achadim Ba'u Be'etza Achat Va'amru Lo Kol Kehemenu She'yibor Lo Eta Elyonim. It's not. This is a theme that exists in Chazal and which Rashi carries through, which is that the creation of the world produced a kind of competition between heaven and earth. And you can think about that in, you know, different ways, like who is competing? Was it angels? Was it Tzva'ot HaShamayim? It's not so obvious, but this theme, which also comes to the Chumash itself, right? You know that they were the Nephilim, these people who came down from heaven and struck up an acquaintance with the women in the world. That indicates that there was some kind of a unsavory connection between heaven and earth. Not only a savory one, but an unsavory one that had to be somehow resolved. That part of the creation of the world was that, the way Chazal understood it, was that it created tension. And that tension had to be resolved. But the high point of that tension was this story. The story that we are learning. Na'ala Rashi, Rakia v'naseh bo milchama. The people all got together. And they said, let's declare war on heaven. Davar acher, al yichido shel olam. Al yichido, yichid is the Hebrew word echad. Echad refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the echad sheba olam. Davar acher, yichido shel olam. Davar acher, udevarim achadim. Amru, achat le'elef v'sheish v'yot chavishim v'sheish shanim, Harakia mitmotet kishem she'asa bimei ha-mabul. In other words, people looked around and they said there was a mabul. And you know, there's this discussion amongst the medieval philosophers about whether God can change God's mind. Right? It's like a discussion, you know, like if you have really not very much to do, you could think about that. But what is the point? Of course, you know that the Rambam, for example, got into some difficulty because he did not originally, when he wrote the Mishneh Torah, he did not give a proper place or a reasonable place to the notion of Tchiyat HaMetim. So the Rambam was accused by various Gaonim, which is a separate story that we don't usually hear about, the tension between the Babylonian Gaonim and the leaders of Am Yisrael in North Africa and Spain. There was a certain kind of tension between them, so they decided to popularize this idea that the Rambam did not support the notion of Tchiyat HaMetim. And that's what so there was like a little bit of a fight, and then the Rambam was forced to write a book, a pamphlet, called Ma'amar al Tchiyat HaMetim, in which he said, "Of course, I believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. It's not an issue." So of course, you know, the Rambam did believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything. So if God could do anything, I mean, certainly he could do Tchiyat HaMetim. What the Rambam's problem must have been, I mean, this is like speculation, that there was no indication in the primary text or material that that was what was going to happen. So the Rambam may have left it out for that reason. I confess that I did not discuss this with the Rambam, and I may be dead wrong, but You have to say something, right? That's what teachers do. They say something, even if they might be dead wrong.
He left it out of what?
What?
The Rambam left it out of what?
Yeah.
Out of the Mishnah, the Torah. And also his Perush on the Mishnah, right? The Perush on the Mishnah of the Rambam was the Rambam's original attempt to include Kol HaTorah Kula in a way. Right, that was his idea, that you could get everything, but he felt apparently that he was not really able to do it with the Perush on the Mishnah, and then he wrote what we call the Mishneh Torah or the Yad Chazakah, and there he left it out, even though the first part of the Mishneh Torah is philosophical and ideological. He nevertheless it wasn't there in the Perush on the Mishnah. In the end of Sanhedrin, there's certain places where the Rambam wrote long introductions. It is Perush on the Mishnah, where he tried to include philosophical positions. So in any event, here Rashi says, now I'm back to where we started out from. So there was this question. There was this question, like, if God, once he decides, I say he, I don't mean that, once God decides to do something, will he undecide to do it? And so there's an opinion that says that no, that, you know, that whatever God decides, that's what remains, right? That's the argument of the seven nations in the first Rashi on the Torah. The seven nations, they come and they say, God put us here. So if God put us here, you, B'nai Yisrael, coming, you know, to fight against us, you must be acting against God. This was an argument which, interestingly enough, is continued today in the Palestinian-Israeli discussions about reality. Right? What is the reality of Eretz Yisrael? I don't want to get into that because I'll say things that nobody likes. So I won't say it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. So the assumption is that maybe the way the world was created was the way it has to be. Now the story of the Mabul, which is the first part of the Parsha of Noach, the story of the Mabul is the undoing of creation. In other words, if Tohu Vavohu comes before creation, and Tohu Vavohu might mean, I'm going to give you my interpretation, or a possible interpretation of the words Tohu Vavohu, that there's no distinctions, right? Part of what happened in creation was the water was here and the dry land was here, right? Before, there was day and there was night. There were distinctions that were created from the Tohu Vavohu. There was Tohu Vavohu, and then there were distinctions. Now, what happened in the Mabul? Everything was covered up with water. Right, Ruach Elokim Rachefet al Pnei Hamayim. Again, that first pasuk of the Torah. We went back to pre-creation. Noach equals Adam Harishon. Right, Noach equals Adam Harishon. The first mitzvah, or the first pseudo mitzvah, depending on how you understand it, that Adam Harishon received was Pru Urvu. Right? Maybe it's a mitzvah, maybe it's not a mitzvah, but it's a directive of some sort. The first directive that Noach received, again, was Pru Urvu. The life of Adam HaRishon really started when he got kicked out of Gan Eden and had to go into agricultural work, so to speak. Noach understood immediately that he's got to get out there and work and grow something. I mean, that became his undoing as well, so that you see, one could say that the story of Noah is the destruction of the created world and the rebuilding of the created world, where first there was Adam HaRishon and Chava, etc., etc. Now it became Noah. Noah was the father. This interpretation is correct. It's also interesting that the world doesn't start from Noah. It starts from Avram Avinu, but that's for next week. See, so the Rashi says, the third interpretation, אמרו אחת ל 1656 שנים הרקיע מתמוטט כשם שעשה בימי המבול. In other words, they said, it can't be that God changed God's mind, or God created a world which was just not appropriate. That can't be. But what must be is that when God decided to create the world, it was a two-step process. It was as though God said, I'm going to create the world. Trying to be respectful. God said, I will create the world, but it'll take two steps to create the world. That was l'chatchila. So the people came to the conclusion. The people came to the conclusion that every 1,600 some odd years, this is going to happen again. Because that's what it means to say that, what we mean to say that God planned on this. God planned on this. So this number, I don't have the patience for this, but here I have the Art Scroll Rashi. Did you ever see the Art Scroll Rashi? It happens to be very good, as far as I could tell. As much as I would like to be negative about Art Scroll, I can't. This one is very good. This one, they have the Rashi, and then the Rashi translated into English. There are several attempts at producing Rashi translated to English, and they all copy from each other. And in spite of that fact, this is very good. This is very good. Now, why did I bring it? Why did I bring it here? I brought it because here in the footnote tells you how it gets to that number, 1,600 and something or other, which I don't have the patience for, but I want to read it to you. Adam was 130 years old when Seth was born. You understand they're going to figure out the number of years by the generations. And so Adam was whatever it was, and then Seth, and then Enosh, and then Canaan. And you go through all of these people. Noah was 600 years old at the time of the flood. Thus, you have to be careful with people use that word. That's like I'm about to say something of great importance. So what they say is, thus, there was a total of 1,656 years of creation until the flood. And then it's a C chronology on page 114. Which is exactly the same thing. Here, 114, 10, 12, 14. It's exactly the same thing, but you see? Isn't that better? So if you want to take the trouble to learn this, it'll take you at least the same amount of time as taking to read the paragraph. But if you're into pictures, here's the picture of the 1,600 years. So that's what Rashi's referring to. Rashi's referring to the 1,000. Now you know that Rashi did have a sense of history and was interested in organizing the history of things. So he quotes this, and he says, "Amar achat l'elam sheish miyot chavishim v'sheish shanim arekia mitmotet." Every 1,600 years, the roof of the world will kind of come apart. What an idea. Like, let's go and build something. We'll prop it up somehow. We'll prop up the... You can see three davar acher is not common in Rashi. Right? Two, okay. Three is rare. But Rashi... So you could say that there's something here that Rashi is... like finds difficult. Rashi finds difficult. Difficult the idea that man, after all, man at the time of at this time, was somewhat similar to man that we know, / woman. Right? There's got to be some. Can't be totally. How can they come up with such a stupid idea? That, you know, not today. Nobody would do a thing like that. But how did they do it? So Rashi, he says, look, you know, Chazal, they also had difficulty pinpointing what exactly is going on. But there is something going on, and it has to do with what we said originally, which was that there's this tension between heaven and earth. tension between heaven and earth. That tension between heaven and earth is culminated, according to the Gemara, at the time of Matan Torah. At the time of Matan Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the angels or the heavenly hosts, okay, it's time for Matan Torah. It's a Gemara in Shabbat. It's time for Matan Torah. So the heavenly hosts, such as they are, they say, what? You give it to these blackguards, these good-for-nothings. They're not going to be able to do it. They won't keep it. Give it to us. Give it to us, and we'll take care of it. So you see that in the way Chazal understood. So there's a theme that in the Chazal that before Matan Torah, the Jews at Har Sinai had to be purified. That the whole process of Yitziat Mitzrayim had to also be a process of purification to enable them to be worthy of Matan Torah. But this idea that there is some kind of a tension that exists between heaven and earth, which in later text is described in a slightly different way, like we want to be with heaven, not against heaven. We want to know how Moshe Rabbeinu. We want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, right? You know that in Chassidut, the leadership of the nation is always called Moshe, right? He's always there in every generation. Every generation is a Moshe. There's somebody who can actually touch God. And if you hang on to the coattails of that tzaddik, of that righteous person who can touch God, actually, or be, if not face to face with God, but like God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, at the horaiter, you'll see my back, but you won't see my front, which obviously, you know, begs for a metaphoric interpretation. Nevertheless, this idea that you can, right? You know, it's called in religious studies, like you know, this idea of unity, of becoming with God, close to God, feeling God. Right? The reason that people go to Uman on Rosh Hashanah is because they don't feel that way by going to shul, right? Well, you know, some things you just can't straighten out. So now, Pasuk Bet. Here we are, Pasuk Bet. Vehibin asam mikedem. Kedem is a word in Hebrew which usually often means to the east. Bin asam mikedem. They went from one place, vayimtzu bika, and they found a valley, a bika is like a valley. Be'eretz Shinar, in the land of Shinar, which is Babylonia, so they all got together, and they went to a new place. Why they go to a new place, I don't know, but Rashi says, vayimit asam mikedem, shayu yoshvim sham, kirechtiv lemala vayhi, Moshavam bechulei har hakedem v'nasu misham latu le'makom lachzik et kulam v'lo matzu ela shinar. Okay, Rashi says I think the same thing in different words. So they went to wherever they went to. Vayomru isho re'eu havanil benalav einim v'nisrifal esreifa v'tilem halav eina le'evin v'chemar yalem lechomer. It's not so obvious why the Torah had to tell us all of this. If you want to build a migdal, you have to build it out of stones or bricks. And this is how you make the stones. This is how you make the stones, etc. Pasuk Dalet. Vayomru. Hava nivle lanu ir u'migdal v'roshov v'shamayim v'naseh lanu shem pen nafutz al penei kol ha'aretz. So now it's not clear whether this is a new thing or the same old thing. Hava nivle lanu ir u'migdal v'roshov v'shamayim. A migdal is a tower that goes all the way up to heaven. How high that is, I don't know. V'naseh lanu shem. V'naseh lanu shem. And we won't be... It won't be able to eradicate us. We'll have a shame. A shame is a name. A name is a higher level of existence. Everybody knows that Adam HaRishon was charged with naming the animals. And naming the animals meant that you had the animals had existence. Each animal, right, was part of the creation when it received a name. Adam received the name Adam. And Chava received another name, and the children received names. Names were very important. They were comparable to existence. It wasn't that, you know, they were created, But they might have disappeared. They might just have disappeared. V'nasa lo l'shem pen nafutzo p'nei kol ha'adamah. Okay, I don't know if we have to read these. This Rashi. I just want to go to pasukei. Vayered Hashem lirot vayered Hashem lirot vayered. You know, it's a word that's under contention, right? When you say God went down, that means that God is discernible in some way, right? You can't say that God is everywhere and God went down, unless you create a metaphor and you say, well, God went down means that suddenly you became aware of God in a certain place. It doesn't mean go down. But you know that this word appears several times in the Torah, and it was the subject of interest for many commentaries, including the Rambam. So it says, Vayered Hashem lirot et ha'ir. So they did what they did, these people. They built a city, and they built a migdal, and the Rosho Ayab HaShabayim was all in heaven. Ve'et ha-migdal ha-shabanu b'nei ha-adam. Right? They saw the ear, and they saw the migdal. Pasuk Vav, Vayom HaShem, Ein Am Echad, B'Safa Echad L'Kulam. They each have, they have one nation, the Safa Echad. All of these people, what is the Safa? What is the Safa Echad? Am Echad, B'Safa Echad, Rashi. Kol tova zo yeshi mahem, sha'am echad heim v'saba echad l'kulam, v'davar ze ha'chelu la'asot, that they started to do, that's what the pasuk said, v'ze ha'chilav la'asot, v'ata lo yivatzer mehem kol asher yazmu la'asot, lo yivatzer lahem. They'll be able to do whatever they wanted to do, hava nerda, pasuk zayin. You see Rashi, hava nerda? Beveiti no nimlach meavono mea nevatuno ha yetera ve'an ve'tanuto ha yetera, which means nase adam k'vitzalmenu kidmutenu. Right, that's what it says. Nase. So of course, what's nase? Why is it a plural? God made the world. God made Adam arishon alone, as far as we imagine. So nase adam etzalmenu kidmutenu, Rashi says, ad v'sanuso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu hizo. This is humility. What does that mean? What does that mean? It doesn't mean God is humble. It means that God invented humility. And who was humility invented for? Us. It was in other words, not only did God create man, but God immediately gave man the opportunity to be the superior person. What makes him superior? Anava. Humility. Humility is what makes man superior. How am I so sure about that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to write the tombstone for Moshe Rabbeinu, that was the tomb. Anav Mikol Adam. He had the greatest amount of humility. And what did the humility stem from? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu so humble? Because there wasn't anything left. Once you are with God, you don't really want the car. You know, it's like, it just doesn't go. So there's nothing. There's no honor that people give each other that they could have given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, what we perceive is humility. One second. You have to forgive me, I can't see.
The question that I have is on the word anava. Is humility a good translation? Is there a good translation for anava, or is it more encompassing than what we know as humility?
Look, I'll tell you the truth. If I was over there, and you were over here, I would ask the same question. But since I'm over here and you're over there, I'm going to ignore it. The whole idea of good translation is what we're going to end up talking about. Okay? I mean, what I mean is I don't know the answer. So, in any event, that's anava. Havaner da, so Rashi says here that this is advisanuso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is humility. I mean, I can't help myself. You know, this is the humility of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there's a plural, right? Nerda, we will. But as we said previously, right, that this is the creation story, right? The parasha of Noah is the story of creation, the recreation of man. His name was Noah. He had mitzvot or directives. He had children. He had problems. But he had a promise, right, which this Rashi seems to ignore, that the world will remain as it is. Like there won't be a major difficulty in the world. So that's what Rashi says. Hava Rashi. Mida keneged mida. Heimanu hava nivneh. V'hu kenigdeh. Devame hava nerda. Okay. Mida keneged mida usually means an action. An action for an action. But there is this idea. There is this idea in Parshanut that when you see the same word appearing in two places and they seem to be connected to each other, you know, Chazal would notice that. Gzeira shava is a little different. It's a little different because the Gzeira shava doesn't really have to have any sense. You know, it doesn't have to make sense in its own right, right? But it's just the tradition of understanding. But, all right. So then, Pasuk Chet says, I'm sorry, Pasuk Zayin says, Hava Nerdam, Neblashat Svatam, Ashelo Yishmu Ish, Svatrei Ehu. A very interesting punishment that they receive for, but it's not just a punishment, it apparently will prevent this from happening again. Because what was the cause of all of this? That they got together. That they were able to talk to each other. That they were able to come to some sort of plan and about what to do. Now, if they can't speak to each other, so that is obviated. It's not going to happen. Vayafetz Hashem otam misham al pnei kol haaretz vayachdelu livnota ha'ir. So there's besides nivla sham svatam, there's also Vayafetz Hashem Otam. They became the speakers of different languages. Vayachdelu livnota irakein kirashma bavel, kisham balal Hashem svat kol haaretz, misham efitzam Hashem al pnei haaretz. That's why that place where these languages came into being is called Bavel, Balal, Bilbel. I mean, it's like, okay, you could make some kind of a connection like that. Understand what I'm saying? Like Bavel is not Balal. Bavel is Bet Bet Lamed, and Balal is Bet Lamed Lamed. So why would Chazal think it's the same? Or why would the Torah think it's the same? Because there is in Hebrew this idea of four-letter roots. Very often four-letter roots are two letters repeating each other, like onomatopoeia, like tziftef. Tziftef is what birds do, right? Bilbel is what God did here, bilbel. And very often these words that are essentially four letters, one of the letters gets swallowed up, especially if they are bachlam, bet, kaf, lamed, mem, often disappear in various nitiyot of the words, so that bilbel could become bavel. You are you with me?
Yeah.
I was getting nervous when I talk about grammar. It's kind of a turnoff, right? But that's the way it is. If you would like look into the matter, you would find that these four-letter repeating roots often become three-letter roots in different forms, and those three-letter roots are what we have here, right? Bavel, because Balal, right? Which looks like two different words, but it could be that they are the same. Okay, so we see that's what happened. Now, let's go to a different world. And that's the world of the halacha. You see the next source says Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim, Hilchot Tefillah, Siman Kuf Aleph, Sif Dalet, Yechol Yitpalel B'Kol Lashon Sheyirtzeh. That's the halacha. It's based on the Gemara in Sota. Right? You can daven, you know, if you have that art scroll sitter. Now I could say Korain sitter. Or I remember when the yeshiva started, everybody had Tehillat Hashem in English, right? And art scroll beat them. I'm not sure why, but they did. Art scroll is three times as fat as Tehillat Hashem was, I think. So I would think that Tehillat Hashem would win on just being easy to carry around. But no, art scroll won. So Yechol Yitpalel B'Kol Lashon Sheyirtzeh. V'hani Mili B'Tzibur Al V'Yachid Lo Yitpalel Al B'Lashon HaKodesh. So there is this odd statement in the Shulchan Aruch that you can daven B'Kol Lashon. That's not odd. But then the Shulchan Aruch makes a distinction between Tzibur and Yachid. Tzibur means you're in shul with a minyan, and Yachid means you're alone. Right? So Hani Mili B'Tzibur. As long as you're davening B'Tzibur, you can daven B'Kol Lashon. Gedam shol lashon, aval biyachid lo yitpalel ela b'lashon hakodesh. V'yesh omrim, you know, the Shulchan Aruch very often quotes things in the Yesh Omrim. It's a little mysterious why he does that. This is the Mechaber, Rav Yosef Karo. Why do you say Yesh Omrim? What do you mean that it's I should take it seriously or I shouldn't take it seriously? I mean, Yesh Omrim sounds like. It's not the essential halachic position, but it's like, if you're interested in being frum, you could do that. At least that's in modern tshuvot, like that's a kind of an attitude that is assumed. Rav Moshe Feinstein and some poskim in Eretz Yisrael, you know, would do that. They would say, this is the halacha, but if you want to really be frum, do this. Add on. So it's not clear in the Shulchan Aruch, not clear to me. Maybe it is clear to somebody else. But he said, this distinction between Yachid and Tzibur is only for special kinds of tefillot. Tefillot about a particular issue, something that comes up, a choleh, or al shum tsar sheyesh lo bebeito, some kind of difficulty that he has in his family. Aval tefillah hakvua latzibur, afil yechid yichol omra b'chol lashon. But what we call tefillah, which is shmona esrei, whether you say it b'tzibur or b'yachid, you could say it b'kol lashon, which brings me back more to the position of the Gemara. So the Gemara says that you could daven b'kol lashon. So of course the question is, what's the issue? What exactly is the issue of davening? Why did the Gemara have to say anything? Of course you could daven b'kol lashon. After all, the Tanakh is full of people who davened. And they davened about whatever happened to come up. And it's true that they davened in Hebrew. But it's also true that they didn't know Spanish or Arabic or English or anything else. But they just spoke the words that they knew. And so why would anybody think that you should not speak the words that you know? That you should not speak the words that you know in whatever you have to daven. We ever have to doubt. So let's look quickly. B'kol Lashon. Look at the Mishnah Berurah. Maybe remember. Oh, here it is. Here, the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah. You know, the Mishnah Berurah wrote three Perushim, which we call it the Mishnah Berurah, but he called one of them the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah was the interpretation or further interpretation of the Shulchan Aruch. Was he read the Shulchan Aruch, and he said, "Well, you have to know this. You have to know that. You have to, you know that. That's how the Mishnah Berurah works. That's called Mishnah Berurah." Now listen, he says, "Mitzvah min ha'mufchar hu davka b'lashon hakodesh Mitzvah min hamuvchar. Mitzvah min hamuvchar, I don't know exactly what that is, but I mean, it certainly it means that if you have a choice, if you can daven either in Hebrew or in, we'll say, English, right, you should definitely daven in Hebrew. Mitzvah min hamuvchar. Right? If you don't know Hebrew and you can't read Hebrew, so of course you have no choice, so you know, daven in English. But if you have a choice, and you can daven either in Hebrew or in English, and if you say to yourself, look, the English speaks to me. You know, people say that sometimes. I never know what they mean. But it speaks to me. I know the words mean. I feel good about them. I'd rather daven in English. No good. The Mishnah Berurah says you should daven in Hebrew. Mitzvah min hamuvchar davka b'lashon kodesh v'yayin b'siman samach beis v'mishnah berurah shem ma shekatavnu b'shem achronim b'zeh v'gam hayayin b'tshuva tzchatzim sofer etc. etc. she'arit b'kama rayot d'ma she'itiru litpalel b'kol hashon. I know now that Chatzim Sofer is not one of the Mishnah Berurah's great heroes. I mean, the Mishnah Berurah has a kind of, there's a list of people that he quotes all the time. The Chatzim Sofer is not one of them, but here he quotes the Chatzim Sofer. I'm not evaluating it. I'm not telling you what the Mishnah Berurah thought about the Chatzim Sofer. I'm just saying that the Mishnah Berurah does not commonly quote the Chatzim Sofer. But here he says, "Haynu davka b'akrai." He says, "When are you allowed to daven in English? Only when it's something happened accidentally or in a timeless fashion." Shairich b'kama rayot demashi tiv litpalel b'kol hashon haynu davka b'akrai. Aval ekboa b'kviat b'idit ulamit shatz v'ashkiach mashal hakodesh legamrei ze iyev shab b'kol b'shum ovelayin shab. So it's great. The Gemara says you can daven b'kol hashon. The Chatzim Sofer says the Gemara doesn't mean that. It's like a fallback position. But it doesn't mean that you can go to shul and daven in English, or that shliach tzibur can daven in English. You can't do that. Eif shabashum open, strong language. It's impossible. Ayin sham, ba'od machmat, kama v'kama ta'amim, nechokhim, erichu kol go'nei azman, v'sevet derei abrit, v'iskimu she'isu gamu v'lasot kein, v'lafuke mekitot chadashot sh'nitpartzu michutz l'medina bazeh v'etiku, et kol nusach ha-tvila l'shon ha-mim v'aveira goreret aveira sh'dalgu ha-bracha shel kibbutz kaloyot b'kad l'Yerushalayim irecha v'kashem sh'rotzim l'ashkiach z'kron Yerushalayim k'rotzim l'ashkiach l'shon ha-kodesh v'Yisrael. Oh! So you see the way the reform movement existed in time of the Mishnah Berurah. And you know that everybody knows, or you should know, that the Mishnah Berurah was not interested in fights. He was only interested in winning. Right? The Chatzim Sofer, on the other hand, was very interested in fighting. And he was very strongly opposed to any kind of reform that took place. And originally, the reform was very minor. The neologians in Western Europe, right, Germany, Hungary, a few other places, they didn't want to change everything. But one of the first things they wanted to do was to speak to the people in the vernacular, so that they changed the drashot, the language of the drashot, was changed into German or Hungarian. And the opposition went wild. It wasn't even davening. It doesn't do it davening. And then, little by little, the reform. I mean, this is a description of what happened. The reform became very much into this idea that instead of educating your children, you just translated everything into Hungarian or German, and you went along that path. Interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah says. Right, the Mishnah Berurah says, "Kein rotzim lashkiach l'shon haKodesh b'Yisrael, pein yigalo b'schut shelo shinu et l'shonam haKodesh Baruch Hu yishmerenu mideot apikorsiot ke'elu." So he says, the Mishnah Berurah says, you know why? Or he's quoting Chatzim Sofer. He says, why is it that they did this? Why is it that they spoke to the people in the vernacular instead of teaching them Hebrew? So he says, well, they knew that Hebrew will redeem the nation and bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. And they didn't want that. They didn't want the Jews to come back to Eretz Yisrael. They wanted them to be wherever they are. So what would the Mishnah Berurah, the Chasam Sofer, say when today Hebrew became much more important because of Eretz Yisrael? I mean, no Orthodox Jew would suggest that you should not teach children Hebrew. I mean, at least I've never heard of such a thing, because the Mishnah Berurah says that's the path. That's the path to redemption. There's one other source here. One other source. I'll turn the page.
Yeah. There's a lot of Orthodox Jews that prefer Yiddish for everything.
The prayers?
For a lot of Orthodox Jews prefer Yiddish today for everything.
Not davening.
No, but in all learning and everything, you know.
It's like us.
Everything except for
It's like us speaking English.
Yeah.
We know we're doing the wrong thing. And that, you know, that our children and grandchildren will do the right thing. So here, the Be'er HaLocha is another commentary of the Mishnah Berurah, which discusses what he sees are issues connected to what he just explained to us. Let's all just show you that he says, I am the Mishnah Berurah, because of Bogan Avram, B'Shem Ha Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim is a medieval, interesting medieval work. I can't discuss it now. The Mutav lit palel belashon shemevin, im eino mevin loshel hakodesh, umuchak b'sefer Chassidim siman kach b'kach. The hainu davka im hu yerei shemayim, uritzono bazeh, urak kedei sheyitpalel b'kavana. Aval im eino b'chi haygabna yitpalel b'loshel hakodesh. So again, the Mishnah Berurah says, based on the sefer Chassidim, that the measure, if you know Hebrew, if you can read Hebrew, and you know English, and you could say to yourself, I have more kavona davening in English, so you should daven in English. But that's the measure. That's the measure of it. And Sefer Chassidim couldn't even imagine a Jew who didn't know how to read Hebrew. He says, so again, it says, V'atam, ki loshon HaKodesh yeso skulot rabot mikol shonot. That Hebrew is something special. Kimo shekatav Ramban beferashat kitiso, beferashat tiso. Chazal amaro v'lashon hakodesh nivra haolam. Kivichtiv lizot yikarei isha kibish lukach hazot. V'gam shetiknu kneset hagdola et nusach hatfila. Ayu kuf. Okay. So in other words, the continuation in the Be'er HaLocha is a justification of the idea that Hebrew is the right language to daven in. You should daven in Hebrew. But the justification comes from these kind of facts. God created the world in Hebrew. God spoke to people in Hebrew. God spoke to prophecy. He created prophecy in Hebrew. All of that. And so you could say that Rabban Tanu may call halashonot. Rabban Tanu call halashonot is like de facto, we're the only ones left with Hebrew. And while it's true that everybody can daven in the language that they speak, but you can't. People cannot daven. Only Jews can daven in Hebrew. And it's clear, de facto, sort of, that Hebrew is the best option. That's what the Be'er HaLocha says, and he says it elsewhere. He quotes himself again in Sabbath Dal. Now, I wanted to tell you what the Sfat Emet says. The Sfat Emet that I'm referring to is in the beginning of Dvarim. Unfortunately, only the beginning of it was, I guess it was my fault. My directive was unclear. But it's not this paragraph that I was interested in, but the paragraph that follows it. And in the paragraph that follows it, he says that Hebrew is something that enables a certain kind of communication even today. So that Yom Hamtana Mikol HaLashonot, the Satamet says, Masha Ma Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo Ish Dvarim. And don't remember, Moshe Rabbeinu talked to Kodesh Baruch Hu and says, I can't speak, I'm not good at that, that's not me, I'm impaired somehow. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. So he says, Halo Diber Hashem Yitbarach Gamaz. So it's ridiculous, he says. Here's Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to God, and he says, I can't speak, I'm not a speaker. What do you mean you're not a speaker? For the last 3,000 years, every Jew would have liked to be in that position, speaking to God. And here's Moshe Rabbeinu, he's like a shepherd, he's walking around. I mean, maybe he has certain kind of special qualities, but we don't know. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he meets up with God in the snare. He meets God. And God says to him, take off your shoes, come close. He says, this is the real thing. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that it was the real thing. And what does he say to God? He says to God, I'm not a speaker, I'm not a talker, you know. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. This whole conversation doesn't mean anything. The Sfat Emet says, listen. He says, Rak lehefech ledaber leparo lachnis ba'amar Hashem b'leshon ha'muvan leparo ze lo yakod miyitziyad Yisrael b'nat ha'Torah k'mo shekatuv b'zohar ha'kadosh. So he says, this is what he says. Is it for me?
No one ever calls me.
No, I said that first. Now, listen. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God and says, okay, I am a Hebrew speaker. I have an advantage because I speak Lashon HaKodesh. So when HaKodesh Baruch Hu appears to me, I can connect to that. But now you want me to go to Paro. This is the Sfat Emet, I'm telling you. I mean, you can look it up. Of course, you have to subtract my theatrics. But then you'll get what it says. The Sfat Emet says that what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to HaKodesh Baruch Hu was, in Hebrew, Zeholech. But in Egyptian, it's never going to go. How am I going to speak to them? What am I going to say? I can't speak to them in Hebrew. They don't understand Hebrew. I can't share with them the experience because the experience is dependent on the language. It's dependent on the language that we speak to each other. So how can I go and say I represent God in Egyptian? It's definitely not going to work. They're not going to work. In which case, according to the Sfat Emet, the question of what's God's response? What's God's response? It's more like Moshe Rabbeinu, listen. Of course they're not going to listen. Of course Paro's not going to listen. Of course not going to understand. Of course he's, you know, that's what idolatry is. Idolatry is that there's a limit. That it doesn't matter how much Paro will be punished. It doesn't matter how difficult it is for the Egyptians. Eventually, they think, the power that is causing all of this trouble will run out of steam. They can't understand that you've really connected to the ultimate power. But that's what we've got. That's called Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's partially for the Egyptians and partially for the Jews. But Ramam Tanum, we say Ramam Tanum, we call out a shonot. What we say in Widavin, we say Ramam Tanum, we call out a shonot, we mean we understand the potential. We understand what might be. And that's what Ahavta Otanu means. Ahavta Otanu. Davachaita mikol ha'amim. Ahavta Otanu, Ratzis ha'banu. What does Ahavta Otanu, Ratzis ha'banu mean? It means there's an opportunity. It could happen. Right? It could be. It could be that there will really be some kind of a connection that we don't even imagine could take place. But that's only if you daven in Hebrew. Only daven in Hebrew. So the halacha is, yes, okay, if you know, there's an obligation to daven, men daven this number of times a day, and women should also daven at least twice a day. But we daven We daven, we could daven to fulfill the obligation of davening. You could daven in any language that you know well. And you could even have a ta'ana. You could say, you know, this is helpful for kavana, this is helpful for my intense connection to the mitzvah, to the mitzvah. But if you really want to leverage the mitzvah of tefillah into something that is romantano mikol ha'lashonot, you have to daven in Hebrew. That's the halachic conclusion, and also the reasonable position as far as I understand it. Have a good Shabbos.